Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome to everybody. If I could remind people, please, to turn their telephones off. That would be helpful. If I could just make a few announcements before the shiur. First of all, we're very grateful that the shiur is sponsored. For Rafua Shalema, a relative in America who is very sick, we wish him a Rafua Shalema b'chol chali Yisrael. The name is Eliezer Yitzchak ben Shifra. We should learn Torah in his course. Should be a Rafua Shalema for him and for all others who need Rafua Shalema too. I also want to announce, please, that there is a pre-Pesach men's program at the OU Israel Center here, people who are not working in the morning or are not working at all. It will be on Monday mornings. I have the details here. If people want to take leaflets afterwards, they will be shiurim through those Mondays, pre-Pesach, obviously on Pesach in Yonim. Yes, this is a men's program. There are women's programs as well, but this one is men. Talking about Pesach, let's just work out the calendar for the next few weeks. Mi'at Hashem, next week is Purim, so there is Shushan Purim. So there will be no shiur next week, because you'll be keeping Purim and I'll be having a day off. The week after we'll be already in Pesach and Yomim for the few weeks up to Pesach. Sholim v'dorshim, shloshim yimei yitlei achag. So we will be talking a little bit about Pesach and Yonim, which will bring us up to Pesach, and then we'll think about after that. But today, we are still dealing with this, I think, very fascinating legal choshen mishpat issue, which is, what is the deal with copyright downloading music? Today we're going to talk a little bit about VPN and other such things. We're going to see some really interesting historical analysis of this. Difficult machlekot over the years between publishers and how they were resolved, and look also a little bit, if we can, at some halakhic conclusions. I'm not a posek, there are many poskim you can ask, but let's maybe look at the parameters of how to ask the shaila. So last week we looked at the issue of theft. Can we classify downloading music as theft? And we saw that the real problem with theft is that in order to be a gazlan, you have to make a kinyan. There has to be some kind of act of halakhic ownership, acquisition, in order for the gazela, if you like, to classify you as a thief. And the question is, when you click on your computer and you're downloading a piece of virtual information from somewhere in the globe, via somewhere else in the globe, etc., in what way are you making a kinyan gazela? This is everyone scratching their heads. Last week we saw two attempts to try and define this as maybe it could be theft. And the Shaul HaMeshiv, Rav Yosef Nathanson from the 19th century Shailas and Tshuva Shaul HaMeshiv, he says, it's toshet to me, it must be theft. It has to be. Why? Because there can't be something that the non-Jewish legal system is sensitive to that we haven't worked out ourselves. And even though there is no classic sources that deal, there are no classic sources that deal with copyright as such, says it has to be that it's theft because the non-Jewish authorities have this, therefore he takes a strict approach to this and regards it as gazela, which has all sorts of implications in terms of dealing with it, using it when someone else has stolen it. Even if you didn't steal it, there are halakhic prohibitions of handling stolen property. That itself will follow through in terms of the way you look at it. Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, who of course is a contemporary major posek, his approach to it is maybe this. Maybe you could say that there is an implied term, implied or explicit, when someone sells something in the contract of sale, that I sell it to you, but I reserve to myself the right to copy it further. And we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein in terms of tapes. He says even if you buy a tape, back in the 70s, 80s, it was a tape, even though you own the tape, the person who sold it to you reserves the right to copy that tape, and you don't have that right. Or maybe he sells it al tanai, that he says on condition that you don't copy the tape, and if you do, then it means you didn't really buy it in the first place, etc. And we said that that's nice, but there's a problem if I'm not in a direct relationship with the person who sold it. If our scrolls tell me you may not copy anything in this book, whatever you, for whatever reason, I never made a contract with our scroll. I bought a book from the local store, who bought a book from the wholesaler, who bought a book from our scroll publishers. I never promised anything to our scroll, so in what way do I have a contractual relationship with them? That's the problem with that. Today we're going to look at some other ways that the classic Mephoshim over the Poskim over the last 300 years, 400 years, dealt with copyright. If it's not Gezeila, what could it be? So this is going to take us into all sorts of areas. I think we're going to enjoy ourselves. The first possibility is Cheirem. Now, a Cheirem works if people listen to it. If people can just go down the road and listen to another rabbi, then a Cheirem is pretty useless. But how did Cheirem work? So the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, as a relatively young man, in his late 20s, early 30s, in Krakow in Poland, he was approached by his cousin. His cousin, who was older than him, Rav Meir Katzen Ellenbogen, the Maharam Padra. The Maharam Padra was one of the senior poskim in Poland, and Italy actually, he was connected with the Polish Rabbonim. He was in Italy. And what had happened is as follows. He had printed a new copy of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. And he decided to use a certain publisher, non-Jewish publisher, called Bragadin. Now, Bragadin was an upstart in town. The established publisher was a guy called Mark Antonio Giustiniano. Now, Giustiniano had set up himself in a competition with Daniel Bomberg, who, of course, is famous in Italy as the publisher of the Bomberg Schaff. He also was not Jewish, even though he sounds like he should be Jewish. He wasn't Jewish. The Bomberg Schaff has its own story, and the Lunzer collection, and I'm not getting into all of that now. Very interesting, maybe if we have time at the end, I'll mention a little bit about that. But Giustiniano was the publisher who set himself up in town, and the Maharam Padua decided to go with the competition. So what happened is the Maharam Padua published this Mishneh Torah with his own Perush, and Justinian immediately printed a copy of exactly the same thing with the Maharam Padua's commentary, although with a little comment on the bottom saying, this commentary is not really worth reading anyway because it's not very good, okay? Published this in direct competition to the Maharam Padua's original publication because he was very angry that the Maharam Padua had chosen to go with Bragadin rather than with him. The Maharam Padua turned to his cousin, who was by now becoming the senior rabbi in Poland, the Ramah, and asked him, can you put a cheirem on anyone who buys Justinian's book? And the Ramah said, yes, I will. And he wrote a long tshuva in which he says, he talks about the importance of buying books out from Jews, rather than if there's an option to buy from a Jew, you should buy from a Jew to support Jewish business, etc. And then he says, he words his cheirem. Have a look at number one. Shehagon Hanal, this particular rabbi that's gone, Zacha Bidino Linkotlo Shuka Beresha. He got the market. He cornered the market originally. Linkor Sfarav Rishona, he got in there first to sell his book. Veshelo Yikne Shum Adam Sefer Maimoni Hanidpasim Michadash Mikarov Baoki Im Hayotzi Mitzachet Yad Hagon Hanal. No one is allowed, he says, to buy the books of Maimonides, the new prints of the Mishneh Torah, because of course printing itself was only less than 100 years old by this time, from anyone else other than the Maharam Padua or Boy Kocho or his Yorshim, or people who come in his name. Ulechein Lishka, and then he puts his klala on now, his cheirem. Ulechein Yishka the Lizmo Victoa the Mikta the Parzala. So people should be cut up, I'll call me Shiyab or Darka Vedino. Anyone who breaks this halacha, gam anachnu maskimim, umenadim, umeshamtim, umachrimim, benidoi cheirem shamta. We put a complete cheirem on anyone, b'gzeiris irin, b'mama kedishin, from the cities that we have, al kol, talmid, b'tzuriv, katan, b'gadol, sham, who, I don't care who he is, anyone, shaloi yikne shum adam, b'bedino seinu min hanitfasim achadashim. No one is allowed to buy from these new publishers. Ilav me'oysen ayotzi mitachas yad hagonana. Only from the Maharam Padua, or mi boy kocha, or his yorshin. V'chal mishe poiret, anyone who breaks down this geder, poiret geder, nachashi chasheno, okay? Yitgano chivya derabbonim v'tov v'paret. The snake of the rabbis, when the rabbi said, if you break a geder, a snake will bite you, that person will be bitten by that snake, as it were. V'chal amachzik v'hem, anyone who even supports this new publication, heim b'cheirem kamoel. They are all included in the cheirem. Everyone is required to put these people in cheirem, which of course is very serious. You can't talk to them, you can't do business with them, you can't make them a minion, etc. And they will not get a kapara until they die, and even then, they can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery either. Very serious business.
El hanidui chayrim v'shamta, anyone who sticks by this chayrim, v'chay yikabel brachas mekel shakai v'ad sheyivlu tisfaysav mimiloy medai.
You get a great brocha if you stick with the chayrim. Now again, if you live in a society where people are very localized, and the Jews in Minsk live in Minsk, and those in Pinsk, and those in Dvinsk, you know, everybody is under their local rabbonim. Cheirem was something that worked up until the mid-1800s, when people became so scattered and disinterested, if you like, in what the rabbonim were saying, that the charamim didn't work. But actually between the 1500s and 1850, then thousands of charamim were made. And in fact, the reason that people have a haskama at the beginning of a book, which we now expect to be someone that says, I read this book and you should buy it, although actually if you read the haskamas, they almost never say that.
No.
They actually usually say, I don't read English, so I never read this book, but my Shamash friend told me that this was a good book, and or I knew. So very often people have haskamas from Rabbonim who died decades ago for new svarim. When you read it, they're not trying to make out that this is a new haskama, it's just they gave a haskama to a book many years before. There's a famous story, the Chofetz Chaim wrote to Rav Yisrael Salanter, asking for a haskama for his sefer, say for Chofetz Chaim, maybe with Shmiras HaLoshen, and Rav Yisrael Salanter refused. He said, I'm not going to write you a haskama. He says, why not? Don't you like the book? He says, no, the book's fantastic. I agree with everything apart from one halacha. Which halacha? He says, you wrote in your book, he said to the Chofetz Chaim, that if you speak Lashon Hara about somebody, and they never knew, and they never suffered, they've no idea, they're completely clueless, they're fine. Nevertheless, you need to go to them before Rosh Hashanah and say, I've been speaking Lashon Hara about you, I'm very sorry, please forgive me. Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, what's the point? What did you achieve? Naniach, I agree, if the guy's suffering, he keeps getting turned down for jobs, somebody out there speaking Lashon Hara about me, I don't know who it is. Then, of course, you have to go and say, ask for Mechila. But if the guy never knew, what did you achieve? He never suffered, he never knew. So I don't agree with this, I'm not giving you a haskoma. So the Chofetz Chaim said, well, just write in the Haskama. I agree with everything but this one halacha. He says, nah, nobody reads the Haskamas. He says, I'll just see Rav Yisrael. So I'll assume everything in the book is under my approval. Never gave it. The Chasam Sofer was asked to give a Haskama by a certain Machaber, and he wrote back to him a letter saying, I actually read this book. There is nothing in this book of worth for the Jewish people. I consider it to be a halachic prohibition to write Torah Shebal Peh if there's no tachlis, and therefore there's no way I'm giving you a haskama. The guy just published the book with a letter in the front. Why? Because nobody reads the haskama. So, however, the Ramah started a new trend where the haskama was not just there to say that the book's a good book, but the book is a good book, and no one else is allowed to print it. There's a cheirem in the haskama. And it varied between 3, 4, 5, and maybe 25 years, we'll see soon, that no one was allowed to print this book. And this was an effective way of protecting copyright for a few hundred years whilst the cheirem had toiket, while it had some kind of teeth, but eventually it didn't. Now, by the way, this story of the rivalry between Baragadin and Justinian has a very unhappy ending. The both of them were so angry with each other, these two non-Jewish publishers, that each reported the other to the Pope in Rome as having printed anti-Christian literature to get the other one put out of business. The Pope basically said, you know, a curse on both your houses, and decided to collect books all across the country, Jewish books, and there was actually a major Talmud burning. In 1553, there was a major burning of the Talmud in Rome and in Bologna. 1,000 sets of Talmud were burnt because of this machlokes, because of this rivalry. And this was basically the end of Talmud printing in Italy. Everything really moved up to Poland after that, and they put a ban on printing the Talmud, and a censor on the Talmud, etc. All from this machlokes. Very interesting historically, but the Ramah made his mark. That's the first point. A second option is the mitzvah of hasagat gvul. We haven't mentioned this yet. Look in number two. There are two psukim in the Torah. First of all, leisasi gvul reyacha, do not move the boundary fence, says the Torah, of your friend, asher gavlu rishonim, which the earlier ones set down. That's an interesting extra expression. Why do I need to say which the earlier ones
set down, v'nachalatcha she'tincha ba'aretz, etc. And also this is repeated, again, in the Brachos and Klalos, number 3, arur masig gvul re'ehu. There is a curse on anyone who moves the gvul of another person. What is this hasagas gvul? Now, obviously, on a pshat level, this is property theft. You can't go into a property and pick it up and make a kinyan on it. You can't do a hagbar, mashicha, etc. The way you steal land is you creep in the night and move the fence 3 or 4 feet to the left or to the right, and that way you steal the land. Clearly, that is prohibited. However, Chazal used this, and certainly the Meforshim, not so much Chazal, used this as having a secondary application, which is not just to land theft, but copyright theft. If someone made a gvul, made a boundary in the market, not necessarily on the land physically, and you go over and you try and move that boundary, that economic boundary, then that could be an issue of hasagat gvul. Let's have a look at a few sources. Look at number 4. And you'll see soon, listen carefully, what the Chasam Sofer will do with this in a few minutes. Amar Abuna, Hai bar mavoi de oiki recha. There's a fellow in a mavoi, a small private road, and he sets up a recha, he sets up a flour mill. He sets up a little cottage industry. The Asa bar mavoi chavrei, and another person in the same small road, we're not talking about the New York metropolitan area, we're talking about a small road, someone else sets up, ukamai ki gaben, sets up a rival business. Dinahu, says Rav Huna, the halacha is, dema'ake viloi. You can stop him. He can take him to court and say, hey, I'm closing you down. Why? Da'amalei can say to him, kapasak talei lechiyute, you're impinging on my livelihood. This is my territory. I have the flower business in this road. You can't set up a rival. Says the Gemara, leima messiah lei, maybe we can bring a proof from the following Gemara, Marchiki Matsudas Hadag Min Hadag Kamale Ritzas Hadag. We'll look at this in more detail in a second. We can move the fishing nets of a fisherman the distance that fish travel. We'll see what that is in a minute. Vakama, how much is that distance? Amarabba Barbahuna at Parsa, maybe even a couple of miles upriver, upstream or downstream. The Gemara wants to say, maybe that's the distance that you have to move a business from a business. And the Gemara says, no, it really all depends on the context, the locality, fish may be different. But one thing is true, which is clear from this, is that we don't have a totally free market when it comes to local business. The halacha will be interventionist in that sense. However, with one exception, Amar Rav Yosef, Umaydi Rav Huna, even Rav Huna agrees, says Rav Yosef, B'makrei Dardaki, teachers of school children, Talmud Torah teachers, Zalai Matim Akev, they can't stop another seminary or yeshiva setting up next door. If I run a yeshiva, and some guy sets up a yeshiva right next to my yeshiva trying to attract the same students, tough luck. It's a free market when it comes to yeshivas. Da'am Amar, because we have a principle, Ezra Tikin Lahen Yisrael, Shiyu Moshivin Sofa Batat Sofa. Ezra was Matakin, even right next to each other. One sofa can set up next to another sofa. Ah, says the Gemara, V'neichosh Dilma Asil Yisrashuli. Maybe they'll get lazy, because, they won't bother. They're between them, they'll just not bother with the competition in that sense. No, Amalei said to him, Kina Sofa and Tarbe Chochma. Everyone's going to want to get the best students. And by the way, as someone who works in the world of seminary recruitment, I can assure you that the competition is fierce, okay? And the market is jammed with people who are all looking for the same students. And therefore, you see from here, yes, we will intervene to protect people's livelihood, but not when it comes to Torah. When it comes to Torah, we want a competitive market to get the very best teachers out there for the students. Okay, how does that affect us? So first of all, look at this Tosfos, number 5. Omer Rabbeinu Meir Avisho Rabbeinu Tam. So he quotes Rashi's son-in-law, Rabbeinu Meir, the father of Rabbeinu Tam. What's the case of the fish? Demari Bedag Meis. We're talking about dead fish. What's with dead fish? Who wants dead fish? Shekein derech hadayagim. It was the way that fishermen worked. Lahasim b'metsudos dagmeis. They would put dead fish in their nets. V'hadagim mit asfim sham saviv oto hadag. And the other fish would swim in to eat the dead fish. V'keivan shezeh pirish metsudos soy tchile. Since this guy put his nets in first, invested, put in the setup cost, infrastructure costs, we might say. And it's because of his investment all these fish are coming in. Vaday im haya chaveru pirish hu keilu goyz aloy.
If someone else says, this other guy says, well, says, well, it's great. All these fish are now swarming into this bit of the river. I'm going to set up my nets right next door. Can't do that. Why? It's as if he stole. Now, why is it not that he actually stole? Because who do these fish in the river belong to?
Nobody.
Nobody. They're Hefker. So why can't he turn around and say, hey, buddy, these aren't your fish. These fish are Hefker. I'm entitled to these fish as much as you are. The answer is yes. It's not Gezela of the fish. But since I've invested in setting up this business right here, you can't just piggyback on my business. It's as if you did Gezela. But Yachaloy Maloy, he can say to him, go put your nets somewhere else. Don't piggyback on my investment. By the way, are you hot? People look a bit hot. Yeah, I think people are a bit hot. You're freezing? Okay, fine. I'm not getting involved. Most people say they're freezing. No, I'm just here for the, you know, benefit of the majority. Fine. So there is a principle, clearly, of intervention here. You can't just do whatever you like in the marketplace. There are halakhic means to stop you taking advantage of somebody else's investment. This has obvious implications for publishing and copyright. Have a look in number 6. This involves a Chassam Sofer and a very interesting fellow called Rabbi Wolf Heidenheim. Anyone who is into Yekesha davening will know that the Sfas Emes Siddur, the Rodelheim Siddur, is de rigueur. You can't do without a Rodelheim. In fact, if you're in a German, you know, Yekesha synagogue, Yekesha shul, you have to have a Rodelheim with a German translation, not with an English translation, that's fasnished. Okay? Im Anfang, Schafgott, Imot und Elder, and all that stuff, that's the Chumash. So, the point here is that Heidenheim decided to do, after the Siddur, which was very successful in 1799, he decided to do a Machzer, the Rodelheim Machzer. So let's have a look at how this works. Number 6. Says the Chassam Sofer, at the beginning of the 1800s, in Pressburg, Ve'im Kein, okay, B'shar Madpisim, Kol She'Kein, B'mishe Hoitzi Davar Chadash. It's one thing with Talmud, where it's an established text, but someone who actually produces something new work, as long as it's not chidush Torah, when it comes to chidush Torah, maybe that's different. She also little schar. You're not allowed to get money for writing chidush Torah. That's maybe a little bit different. About magia svarim upoiske tamim. But this Heidelheim matzah was actually, the whole point is, it was not Divrei Torah. He brought all the Yotzrus and all of the Piyutim and all the things that everybody loves to say. If you ever go to a Yekesha shul, they can't get enough for that stuff. On Yom Kippur, I used to stand on Yom Kippur at Monks in London, when they've run out of all the stuff in the Maksa, including all the stuff at the back of the Maksa, there's almost nobody ever says this. When they've said all of that, they bring out their own book with new stuff in. Everybody loves that, right?
Right.
You're allowed to take money for producing a master. Look at this fellow Heidenheim, he says to Yichia. Look how much time he invested. He was a grammarian, he was into this, in getting exactly the right piyutim. And translating them, the Lashon Ashkenaz, into German. Ilmalihu, if it hadn't been for him, hapiyutim kvar nishtaku v'loy nevru b'doyrus halalu kiyidu. If it hadn't been for him, these would have been lost. Thanks very much. Okay? And therefore he's saved all of these. V'hu tarach v'kibetz kamat svarim. L'meis, he put together so much time, he made all these svarim for hundreds of people, and it's rachim, and said, who need this? People need this. V'n zeha'itzik v'hoitzim mamon rav. He's invested, he spent a lot of his own money on this. Now, so what are we going to say, says the Chassam Sofer? Somebody else basically copied his master and started printing it with all of his work, with the piyutim and everything. The Goinein Rabbi Tzein Chassidei Ashkenaz. It's a long established principle amongst our rabbis in Ashkenaz. Kavu Scharu Leminkad Le Shuka. They established that you can make a shuk for yourself. Al Chaf Hei Shanim for 25 years. That you may not publish again. Anyone else may not publish it. Why? Shaloi yatig acher gvulo. Hasagas gvul. No one can cross his economic boundary line. Veshari hamapisim, the other publishers, yapisa machzir macherim, let them print other machzirim. Not his. Or svarim acherim, let them just print other svarim. Lama yenu b'mashe amaisihu. Shehim sihu. Why should they benefit from what he invested? Vahavalekat sayag dagim. It's like the case of the fisherman, he says, that we just learned. Alibba de Rabbi Meir, Aviv de Rabbi Rabbeinu Tam, but Tosfos. It's like the Tosfos that we just saw, that if you're a fisherman, someone else cannot just come in and steal your investment. Shehu, Hatsayad, Gorem, Kibet, Tadakim. You, the first fisherman, have brought these fish in. And therefore we push the other fishermen downstream. The Hachanami, similarly too, the Kavata Shigam Hum Alecha Shamayim, also since this man is working in Shem Shamayim, Ba'atilish Vishule, Demi Peti, what kind of fool, he says, Yasog Ba'ifanze, Yasid Manu Mamoy. What kind of fool is going to put money into publishing if someone else is just going to copy his work and undercut his profits? Vayavu acherim v'yasigu gvulo. Al korchik, it has to be, he says, yafa asu hagoinim ligdor ba'ad hamadpisim. It's absolutely right that we stop other publishers coming in. I want to intervene and stop other people publishing. Now, by the way, Rav Mordechai Benet, who at the time disagreed and said absolutely not, that the haramim were not appropriate. Why? Because we need a free market in Sfarim. We need competition. We need the best machzorim and the best piyutim. Why? Because didn't the Gemara say before that, okay, we'll stop a flour mill setting up next to a flour mill, but if a sofer wants to set up next to a sofer, don't we believe in free market? Because the competition will increase. So look what the Chasam Sofer says about that. The Chasam Sofer, in number 7, in another tshuva, does something absolutely brilliant. And he uses that principle of free market in Torah to justify a ban against the master. Have a look at what he says. Number 7. You need a lot of time and a lot of big market to make this project work, to get your money back. If we don't close the door but admar pisim acherim against other publishers, in kain mi peti, says the same thing again. What kind of fool yichnas atzmo besafik hefsid kam alofim will put their money into something where they could lose a fortune? What's going to happen if we don't protect publishers? Is nobody's going to publish Chas v'Shalom the Tafuk Torah, and Torah will be reduced. Al korachach letakanas kol Yisrael, it's good for the Jews, he says. Well, aharim keren atern is good for the Torah. In higu kadmonenu, the hatil good al hanichnas glegvul shegvulim rabanei azman la'matvisim akodim. They set boundaries. Now, look at what he says now. But kai malan, don't we paskin moshivin sofer b'tzad sofer? Don't we allow one teacher to set up next to another teacher? Umalam de tinoikas. Afal gav the pasuk accuses the high. He says, why? Why do we allow yeshivas to set up? Not to protect the investment of yeshivas, but to protect the Torah. The hakol mishum yagdil Torah v'yadir. Lama taiva sa sofer. We're not interested in the parnosa of the sofer. Ela lahagdil Torah. Mikol sheken shenigda sheloi listun kriyus to the high. Kide lahagdil Torah. Look what he says. He says the whole purpose of this halacha that we allow a free market in Torah is to bring a net increase in the quality of Torah. So if that goal can be achieved by preventing other publishers from publishing, that's what we'll do. It's not about the investment of the individual. It's about what is best in the long term for the Torah publication in the country. And I'm going to use that principle of free market in the Gemara to justify a non-free market in publishing in the interest of Torah. Which is very interesting because he kind of flips it, in a sense, and uses a principle in the Gemara of free market to justify an intervention. Yes? Right.
Sorry, it's just copying something
right. That's a very good point. This guy's just making money. There's no benefit in allowing him to reprint the master as opposed to setting up the yeshiva next door, which might have higher quality learning 100%. And therefore the Chasam Sofer upheld it, and as I said, up until the 1850s it was very common for Haskamas to include a ban. By the way, if anyone's interested in the Frankfurt Minhagim and the Rodelheim Siddur, the Rodelheim Siddur in its one of the early drafts gives a list of special holidays that people in Frankfurt celebrate. And there was something called Purim Vintz, which the Frankfurt Amman community celebrated on the 20th of Adar. There was a fellow in the 1600s called Vincent Fesmilch who decided to basically raise one of the last pogroms against the Jewish people in Europe up until the 20th century, when obviously things went much worse. To cut a long story short, basically the authorities
tried him, and they hanged him together with his collaborators, and the Jews were saved. And the Jews in Frankfurt am Main celebrated, maybe they still do, I don't know, the 20th of Adar as Purim Vint. So if anybody wants to be a really authentic Yeki from Frankfurt, not from Berlin, you should know, because they're two different worlds, as you know, then Purim Vint might be for you in a couple of weeks. Fine. That's Hasagas Gvul. Let's move on. What about a general principle in Halacha that you cannot cause people loss? Now, this will be very important when it comes to downloading and copyright and VPNs, which we'll get to in a minute. Is there a principle that I'm not allowed to do things that cost other people money? So let's have a look at that in number 8. Says the Gemara in number 8, top of page 3. Hadar b'chaser chaveiro. What if somebody squats? What do we do with squatters? People who go into other people's property and they live there rent-free. Shalom idasayim, they don't have permission. Now, Tzarek rahalo leskar, can we charge them rent? Or ain't tzarek? Or do we not have to charge them rent? Are they allowed to stay there? So look what the Gemara says. Hey chidami, so what's the case? Ileim ebechotet deloi kaimel igra. If it's a courtyard which I'm not renting out. It's somewhere away from the town and it's empty anyway, I have no intention of renting it. V'gavra deloi avid lemigar, and it's a man who anyway has got somewhere else to rent. He's got somewhere else to stay, so he's not getting anything rent-free, and the other guy is not losing anything, because he wasn't going to rent it anyway. So this guy is not benefiting, because he has somewhere else to live. And the other guy is not losing, so of course there's nothing to talk about, there's no charge needed. Oh, maybe he's talking about a courtyard which is up for rent, and now this fellow is preventing me from renting out my property, because I have squatters. And the guy needs somewhere to live, so that's obviously poshut as well. This one is losing, and this one is benefiting. Of course, he has to pay. Loy. So the case must be tzrich b'chaser the loy kamele igra. What about it? Must be the case where the courtyard is not for rent, so I'm not losing. The gavra da avid lemiga, but he has nowhere else to go, and he needs somewhere to stay. My, what's the halacha? If ze nene veze lo chaser, and that's, we touched on that last week. If this one is gaining and this one is losing, then there's nothing to talk about. If nobody is gaining and nobody is losing, there's nothing to talk about. But if this guy is gaining, but this guy's not losing, so what's your problem? Just let him live there. My, mati amale, my sister says, he could say to him, what's your problem? Why are you charging me rent? You're not losing anything. Or Dilma Matsi Amar, no. High snag. But you, he'd say you're benefiting. So look what the Shulchan Aruch does with this. In principle, we say, if this one's benefiting and the other one's not losing, then we won't enforce that because that's midat stom. That's just mean. Well, like I said yesterday, someone's reading your newspaper over your shoulder, as long as they're not inside your personal space, What's your problem? He's not wearing out the print on the newspaper by looking at it. So he didn't buy a newspaper. So you're going to say, well, you can't read my newspaper because you've got to buy your own. That's just mean. We won't enforce that. However, look at the Shulchan Aruch, number 9. Yesh Omrim, but there is a view, because She'ein HaChapta Omed L'Tzchar. If, let's say, the courtyard is not for rental, the guy's not losing, he doesn't have to pay him rent. Why? Because of midat sodom, we don't enforce that. But im chasru afilu davar muad. But the minute that the guy living there does even the slightest damage to the property, kagoyin shehaya habayit chadash, let's say it was newly painted, v'zeh chitzro b'mashehich shira, and they discuss it, and they make it a little dirty by living there. Once you lose even a tiny amount, afal pi she'ein hefsad oisah shachruis elam muad, even though it's a tiny loss. Al yadav megalgilin alav kol atzchar kifi mashenana. He has to pay full rent. The second that you lose anything, even though it's negligible, the other guy's benefit is going to cost him a lot of money. Midat sdom is only when this one benefits and the other one doesn't lose at all, in any way whatsoever. And it's just mean to say you can't benefit. But the minute there's any loss, that's going to be a big deal. And therefore, this is going to be very relevant. When people download music, do they cause any loss to the people who sell the music? They do cause loss. It's just too small to go after the small fry. They tend to go over the big ones, like Napster, if you remember the whole thing with Napster. But in principle, people are losing a lot of money. People who produce music are losing a lot of money. People who play music are losing a lot of money. There is a real loss here. Now, we'll see in a minute, does it matter what the legal position is, we'll get to that. But the Node of Yehuda basically invoked this principle number 10. I'm not going to read the whole of number 10 to save some time, but this was another publishing case where somebody published a Talmud with a new Peirush. Okay? And back in those days, you had to produce the blocks. So they produced new blocks with the Talmud and new blocks with the commentary. And they published this new Talmud. And then the publisher said, you know something? I've got these blocks. I may as well use them. And he threw away the blocks with the commentary. Says nobody needs that anyway. And he just printed a new Talmud with the new blocks that had been produced by the other guy who wrote the commentary and then published that much cheaper. And the Node of Yehuda says, you can't do that. You are causing this other guy loss. Because no one is going to buy this other Talmud with the commentary now. Why should they? They can buy your commentary. They can buy your Talmud much cheaper. Ah, but it doesn't have the commentary. It's got Rashi Tosas. People don't really care so much about the commentary. They're not going to buy your Talmud. And therefore, once that he's caused you loss, all the profits that he's costing you are going to be damages that he has to pay. Which is very interesting. In that case, you could argue, of course, that Yehuda is talking about something physical. It's not like downloading music because there's a block involved. Who does this block belong to for the printing? But nevertheless, he uses this principle of someone who lives in a chatzer, the minute that they cause loss to the owner, even if it's negligible, you can start rolling everything else in. However, the most important principle really when it comes to copyright, we'll see now, is Dina de Malchus Sedina, which is a principle in halacha that no matter what else the halacha says, if I live in a country, the law of that country becomes the halakha. So let's have a look at that now, because that's going to be the most important issue that we deal with today. Look at number 11. Says the Mishnah, Ein poritin loy miteva tamosin. If you need to change money, don't use the chests of tax collectors. Why? Says the Rashi, Lefi shehem shel gezel, because tax collectors are thieves. The money is effectively stolen money. The loimi kis shel gabayim, and you can't even use the purse of the king's collectors. Same reason, because it's gezel. The ein noitli mehem tzedakah, and if people have that money, you can't accept tzedakah because it's stolen money, and you can't accept tzedakah, says the Mishnah, from stolen money, which is itself an interesting concept of what are the parameters of that. Now, says the Gemara, there's a problem with this whole Mishnah. Moichse, what do you mean the tax collectors? The Amar Shmuel, doesn't Shmuel say dina de malchus dina? If the king collects tax, that's legitimate. Why are you telling me that tax collection is theft? It's not. It's the law of the land. Rashi explains. Zeh shekibel et ha-meches min ha-melech v'davah katsuv, kach v'kach, l'shana, ein gazlan. If the tax collector has a clear mandate, I collect such and such amount from these people on a yearly basis, that's not gezel. Amar Rav Chanina bar Kahana, Amar Shmuel, so the case of the Mishnah must be Moiches she'ein lo kitzba. A Moiches, a tax collector that can make it up as he goes along. Yeah? Rashi says, El noitel kechol chetzoi. He knocks on the door and says, you can pay 30%. Next door, they can pay 50%. He's a gazlan. He's not coming with the king's authority. Debe Rav Yanai Amri, or an alternative, but Moiches ha'oimid me'alav, a self-appointed tax collector. The mafia who come round to collect protection money. Okay? That's gazlan. You have to decide exactly what the best way to deal with this is. Yeah, my parents live in Netanya. Every now and then, like, a nice restaurant down the road burns down. But anyway, that's another story. Okay? So Rashi says, Shalom Eitha Melech, Afilu Yeshua Kizba, even though he's fair, I only collect 12% from everybody. So who are you? You just put yourself in the fray. You're not coming from the king. So in principle, the Gemara concludes, the law of the land is the law. If the king collects tax, look in number 12, the Shulchan Aruch rules, if the king collects tax, that's legitimate. Aval, moches shepasku ha-melech, litol davar katsuv. If a pasku ha-melech, the king has appointed this tax collector to collect a fixed amount, and look what the Ramah adds. Afilu tziva sheYisrael yiten yoter me'olik kachavim. Even if the king gives discriminatory taxes against all Jews, non-Jews pay 10%, Jews pay 50%. That itself is fair within the system of the community, of the king. That's called a fixed amount. Because it's applied uniformly, albeit in discriminatory ways between Jews and non-Jews. Says the Shulchan Aruch. The Hamid Moichas Yisrael Gvoisel of the Melech. Okay, he appoints a tax collector, in this case a Jewish one, which may be relevant, to collect it for the king. But neither She'adam Zer Ne'eman, and you know this person is trustworthy. The Ein Moichas Klum, they're not adding on for themselves, Al Masha Gaza Al Melech. Ein Ed of Echeskas Gatla. They are not a thief. On the contrary, the law of the land is the law. The law, not only that, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you avoid, maybe the appropriate word in English is evade, as opposed to avoid. Tax avoidance is perfectly proper. It's just paying an accountant to try and minimize your tax exposure. Tax evasion means you just don't pay what the government says you have to. If you do tax evasion, either allow a low tigzol. You are a gazeler, not the king. This nation, who gazel manat hamelech, you are stealing the king's portion. Bein shehaya melech Israel, bein shehaya melech olis kachavim. But don't turn around and say it's a non-Jewish government. Doesn't matter. If you don't pay your taxes, says the Shulchan Aruch, you are over on lo tigzo. You are a thief. Now, okay, that's taxes. What about other things? What if the government says you can't drive at more than 50 miles an hour on this road? Or if it says you can't park in that space because that space is for disabled parking, or for this, or for that. Are all laws included in Dina Machos Dina? So that itself is an interesting machlokes in the Shulchan Aruch. Number 13. Yesh Oimrin, says the Ramah. There is an opinion. The Lo Yamrin and Dina Machos Dina Ela Bemitin. Umechtin. We only say it with taxes. Hatluim Bekarka, which are land related. Why? Ki hamelech goydeh shelo yudur ba'alta ki im b'derseh. Because the government has said, you can live here on condition that you pay your taxes. And if you don't pay your taxes, then you've no right to live there. So it's land tax. Aval b'shar dvarim lo, but maybe it doesn't apply to anything else. V'yesh chalkim, and there is another opinion, v'siril hua, that applies, that holds, that amrin b'chol davar dina b'chus adina. Anything the government says is dina b'chus adina, not just land taxes. Ulachain, he gives an example. Hamalda ala mashkan, yachol lam limkro achashana. You can sell your collateral after a year. Hoyo vachain din lemachusa. Since that's the Polish law, that's the law. Vachain hu ika. And we pass in like the maximalist approach to din lemachusa dina. It's not just land tax. It's other regulations as well. But not everything. What if the government says you're not allowed to do bris milah? You're not going to say, well, do you have lemachusa dina? It doesn't apply to that. So where are the lines? Number 14. The Loyam Rina Dina Machus Adina Elabadavashi Yeshlo Hanala Melech. There has to be some logic benefit to the government in saying this. Or Shahula Takamas Bnei Hamadina. Or it's some kind of societal regulation to improve the environment of the society you're in. As the Loy Sheyiduna Bedine Oibi Kachavim Dim Kain Batla Kaldini Yisrael. But we're not just going to scrap the whole halachic system and say we'll go with English law, American law, French law, because otherwise there's no halacha left. So even the maximalist approach, which the Ramah says we follow, which is not just tax, it has to be something that regulates society. So what's included in that? So most Poskim will say, well, all the regulations of highway regulations, planning regulations, zoning regulations, that's all included in Dina Machus Adina. Certainly copyright law, certainly. There's no question at all that copyright law is for the general betterment and regulation of society, to introduce rules, etc., that will enable people to make money and protect their rights. However, there are exceptions within the law. And we'll get to that towards the end. Meaning, if I'm going to say that copyright in halacha is regulated by Dina Machus Adina, because I can't actually find anything else in halacha that really connects with it, so if the government tells me that you have a fair use exemption, as long as you're not copying too much of the book, for commercial purposes, etc., you can do it even if they say you can't. If that's the case, then I don't care, with all due respect, what our scrolls say in their book, because it's not relevant. If you say, like the Shoyal Meshiv, that it's theft, so okay, so then I can't, if it says no, I can't steal what they said, I can't steal. But if you say, no, that's not effective, it's Dina Machus Adina, then I can do whatever the law of the land says I can do. And even if they scream and shout that I can't do that, it makes no difference, because Dina de Malchus is Dina. So then you have to get a local lawyer to advise you, what you can and can't do, and that will require you to understand what does local mean, especially when you're sitting on the internet, which we'll get to in a second. By the way, I couldn't resist, because we need to have a proper conversation about this, there's a quite famous stroke infamous ran in number 15 that says that since the whole basis of Dina de Malchus de Dina is you have a right to stay in Poland, in America, in France, wherever it is, by the pleasure of the government, they can, at the pleasure of the government, they can impose whatever rules they write, and if you don't like them, you can leave. That's why you have to pay your tax. But if you live in Eretz Yisrael, says the Rav, you have a right to live there as a Jew. And you're not only there at the pleasure of the Israeli government, because they have no halachic right to throw you out. And therefore, Dina de Malchus de Dina does not apply, at least in the same way. So if you want to argue, do I have to pay my New York taxes? Okay, that's one shaila, Dina de Malchus de Dina. If you have to pay your Israeli taxes, so people want to say, well, not so posh, because the Israeli government doesn't have the same authority on the Dina de Malchus de Dina. Now, I think we need to have a shiur about that, actually, because it's very interesting, and there are many, first of all, do we paskin like this ram or not? Second of all, are there other reasons, apart from this, why you would have to pay your taxes if you live in this country? Doesn't it say, Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael is exempt from arnona, the land taxes that the king used to impose. So I remember once in Rav Zerkovitz, in his kollel, so one of the Avreichim said, says in the Gemara that the Talmud Chacham is exempted from arnona. Do I have to pay my arnona? So first of all, the shaila is you hold yourself to be a Talmud Chacham. That's interesting in and of itself. Okay, first of all. So he said to the guy, look, why does the Talmud Chacham not have to pay arnona? Because he doesn't need all the benefit of the police and the army and the street lights because he has the Shmira Min HaShamayim. God protects him because he's a Talmud Chacham. So he said to the guy, if you feel that we could take away the army, we could take away the police, we could take away everything in society and you'll be fine living in Yerushalayim, then we've got what to talk about. But if you feel that you need those people to protect you, then that's a whole different shaila, which is an interesting question. But we need to talk about that another time. Dina Malchus de Dina, therefore, is great. And according to the more lenient situation on copyright, which does not go with the theft definition, that's going to be the bottom line. What can I do in halacha? I can do whatever the country says I can do. The problem is, well, what are the laws? If I am downloading something in Israel via a server, which is in Venezuela, from a website which is hosted in America, which was uploaded by somebody in Singapore, which law of the land is it? And this is not at all clear. You can speak to intellectual property lawyers. It's not at all clear what jurisdiction you can, because they all have different rules. Is it the fact that I'm sitting in America, this is where I'm downloading the music, therefore it's American law that's relevant, or not? And I have no answer to that question. A, because I was a property lawyer, real estate lawyer. A, B, because it was 20 years ago. And C, because I'm not charging my lawyer charge-out rates to give you advice on legal issues. And therefore, I'm afraid I can't comment on it. Then we have the question, which I want to look at now. What happens if the law is on the books, but nobody really cares? Is that called Dina de Malchus de Dina? And I found a tshuva of Rav Oshavite. Look over the page. Can you put up a sukkah which is against planning regulations? Okay, let's say you put a sukkah on your balcony. I'm not talking about sticking a sukkah in the middle of the street, maybe, where they say you can't put a sukkah in the street, doesn't belong. You put a sukkah on your balcony, it's your balcony. But there is a local planning law, no structures, let's say, above 4 feet, may be erected on the balcony. And you put a big sukkah on your balcony, which is clearly in breach of zoning laws. Is that a sukkah gezula? Are you a gazlan? In which case, your sukkah is not kosher. Okay, I think the people asking the shaila are not so bothered about the planning laws. They're more bothered about whether the sukkah is a kosher sukkah or not. Or are they making brachas levatole, etc. So look what he says, and let's read number 16, because I think this will definitely help us. Amnon Devarenu, let's have a chat here. Yesh le'inyan od. There is another aspect to this, says Rav Osher Weiss. Misha oiva al dina l'machus tadina, machet od. If you break dina l'machus tadina, what exactly did you do wrong? What aveira did you do? What is your pesha? What is your sin? Mitzad mitzvah satoira. Meaning Shmuel came up with this idea, Dina Malchus de Dina. Okay, that's nice. Where does it say in the Torah, thou shalt not transgress the law of the land? What are you doing wrong? Da'atinach b'dinei mominus, when it comes to money issues, tax, etc. Chosen advarim le'itza gezela. We know that. That's gezela, which, by the way, I think will be true of copyright too, because that is a monetary issue. Da'hanotel mamon neged din amalchus da'zlamhu. If you take money against the law of the land, you're a thief. That's for sure. Ach be'inyanim she'ein behem gezelas mamon, but in planning regulations, that's not money theft. The ma'avar ka'ashe loin nahag lefi chukei hamalchut. What did you do wrong? Look what he says, very interesting. V'nir lechayra da'aba al rotzon ha'toyra. You've done the aveira of going against what the Torah wants you to do in life. We'll get more to this at the end a little bit. The bishlam of the melech Yisrael, yesh mitzvahs, soim tassim alecha melech, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to make a Jewish government. Yesh din moirid b'malchus, there's such a thing as a rebel against the government. Ach b'malchus anochrim, but with a non-Jewish government, ma mitzvah yesh behem, what is the mitzvah there? Al korchach, tzarech lama, you have to say, does there rots on the Torah, she'in agadam lefi chukki ha'malchus. The Torah wants you to follow the law, otherwise there'll be anarchy. Yeah, as it says in Pirkei Avos, if you don't daven for the government, everyone's going to be crazy. And that was the chiddush of Shmuel when he said, "Dina mechusatina, who kvari rachti b'minchas asher lechumash tvarim," and he brings you somewhere else. And therefore he said, "Ulefize nira v'gabe shela tvoi tarata." Your shaila about the sukkah. The misha asked the sukkah l'loy rishayon. You put up the sukkah with no permission. Mitzad hashiltonut, because from the government. Ha'im sukkah zek shera upsula. Is it kosher or possible? The nearer the cave and the mouse, takana zol lo mishum gezela, since you're not actually a gazlan, lo mishum gezeli, the lo mishum tzchuyot momen, it's not a monetary issue, ele mishum bitichut hatzibor, because of community security in that sense, shema mivnim ele yizkinu et shalom hatzibor, because these buildings, high buildings, disturb everybody's enjoyment of the community, in kain ein kain gezela, you're not, the sukkah is not a sukkah, agovol gezula, and therefore you're yoked to the mitzvah start. But then he goes on to say a very interesting thing in the next paragraph. And he says, look here, the odd. Egla lemalas kvoda mitzipunei libi, mitzpon maspuni libi. I'm going to tell you something that I think, says Rav Osher. Bidini rechayra, the loy kedini Torah Hashem, tmima dini demalkusa. This doesn't work like Torah. How does the law of the land work? Mikola nogeila mitzvah Torah, anything that comes to, in terms of Torah, ben doraisa, ben derabonon, ein kam mishum lefshara, okay? The fashrut, the ain chokhma, the ain eitz, the ain tzmona, neged Hashem. You can't just make it up as you go along when it comes to Torah. There are halachas. You can't just rationalize. Well, God won't mind. In this situation, it'll be fine. Aval b'dina de malchus, the nira lichayr, the yesh ladun, b'chol inyan lefi inyan oma. So, with dina de malchus, you have to think in each case, what makes sense? Look at the example he gives. V'dugma l'gava, let me give you an example. L'gava chukei hatnua, traffic laws. You may not cross the road. I think he's talking about a pedestrian. The Ramzor Adom, on a red light. There's a red light, you can't cross the road. Are you going to tell me the Adam ha'oimed be'emtza ha'layla? Somebody standing at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 a.m. The Ma'avar at the crossroads. The Huroi Ba'alil, he can see clearly, she'ein kol rechev mitkaret. There are no cars anywhere. No cars. Mikarev l'makom, the ain shum tzad sakana. There's no possible danger. Af al tzad rachok, even in the most remote danger, v'gam ain ishrei, and nobody can see you. Why is that important? The ain chashesh yilmudu mimasav yevoli de sakana. No one's going to learn, oh, if the rabbi crosses on a red light, then I'll cross on a red light, and that'll bring them into danger. V'chi as alay al pi tzayra lavor. Are you going to tell me you're not allowed to cross the road? It's ridiculous. I can't be what. That's not Dina de Malchus Dina, although there are stories of Gedolei Yisrael who would never cross on a red light. Yaakov Kamenetsky talks about the because, but he says that's not a halacha. Maybe that's a midas chasidus. Halom istaba, doesn't it make sense? The afam chaykek lo his kavin la'aso b'mikrek. When they made the laws in Parliament, did they really want you to not cross the road when the red light's on at 1 o'clock in the morning when there's that kind of analysis you can do. By the way, that's actually a very interesting analysis. Why can't I park? Why do I have to put money into the meter? Is it because the law of the land says it's dangerous? You can't park here because we consider it to be, well, if it was dangerous, they wouldn't let you park there at all. So what are they saying? Are they saying, you can do what you like. You can park here if you want. You don't have to put money in the meter. But if we catch you, we'll fine you. So you decide. It's a risk-benefit analysis. 9 out of 10 times you get away with it, and every now and then you'll pay $100. Is that what they say? Is that what they mean? Or do they really mean you can't park here? Unless you pay. So, according to Rav Asher Weiss, I mean, you'd have to start thinking, like, what, I don't think for a minute he would say you can park on a meter without paying. But he says you do have to use your intelligence. But halom istaba, oh, we just said that, sorry. The law cannot distinguish in these ways between all these cases. And then he says in the next paragraph, it's equally clear that if there's a law on the books that nobody enforces, then that's not called Dina the Bachol Sedina. He says everybody builds these sukkahs. Nobody enforces it. Nobody gets a letter saying, please take this structure down within 8 days or something like that. Which will be okay. Right? No, nobody gets a letter. You see, because no one gets a letter, they don't really care. They don't really care about sukkahs. It's a law in theory, but not in practice. And everyone can see that there are laws in every jurisdiction which are ridiculous laws that you can find that nobody cares about. But, you know, how far are you going to take this? Is that true of copyright? I don't think this is true of copyright. He doesn't say it is, but I don't think you can say this. Because they would love to enforce copyright. It's just not economically viable to do that in every single case. Where they can, they do. But it's an interesting analysis of Dina Dabal Chosadina. You do have to use your seichel a little bit as to how that works. The last thing before we talk about VPNs in the last 5 minutes is market practice. There is a whole analysis where it's the minhag in this particular community of economic community. Look for a second, number 17, Tan Rabbanon, Shaira Shahaita Mahaleches Bamidbar, if there's a caravan going through the desert of traders, the Amadalea, Gaius and highwaymen come, the Tarfa, to capture it, Mechashrin Lefi Mamon Ve'ei Mechashrin Lefi Mefosha. Who has to pay? According to the amount of money they are, not according to the amount of people, V'la Yishana Miminaka Chamorin, but if there is a local custom within traders, that you follow the local custom. So too it says if there's a ship which is in trouble on the high seas and you have to start throwing stuff off the ship to keep the ship afloat, whose stuff do you throw off? Says the Gemara, you go according to the minhag. Sailors have their own trade customs, whatever it is, you follow the local custom. Other people say this is true also of business and there will be true of copyright. Let's talk for a minute about VPNs. There's not much to say. What is a virtual private network? A virtual private network works as follows. When I go online, I connect through a server, and the data provider, or the content provider that I'm connecting to, knows who I am. Because they can see I have an IP number, my computer, every device has its own IP number. They can see exactly where I'm coming from, they can see exactly what I'm looking for, and they can log who I am, when I went on, and what I'm downloading. Everything is there. Ayn Raya. Everything you do is seen. So if you don't want that to happen, you can go through a VPN. What is a VPN? A virtual private network. I can route my access to the internet via another server, which they don't know who I am. The people, ultimately the people who are giving the information don't know who I am. All they know is it's coming from this VPN. This VPN could be in Maine, in America, okay, and I'm sitting in Israel. Why would you want to do this? There's a few reasons. First of all, there are people living in repressive regimes where they're not allowed access to the internet, China, North Korea, etc. The use of a VPN will enable them to access the internet, so this becomes a free speech issue. Of course, in those countries, it's illegal to use a VPN, obviously, but they're less likely to get caught that way. But people also, for perhaps less noble reasons, want to use a VPN. If I have a Netflix subscription in America, and I want to access that from Israel, so I can fool Netflix into thinking that I'm in America by going through a VPN. Or if I want to look at the price of flights, and it's well known that certain countries who check the same website get different prices, and I know that if the website thinks I'm in America, it'll give me cheaper flights, but if it knows I'm in Israel, it'll charge me more. That's a reality. I can fool them into thinking that that's the case. Is there anything wrong with doing that? It's all legal. In Dina de Malchus Dina, it's all legal. But they know. They know you're coming from a VPN. Meaning, they know that they don't know who you are. And it's legal in almost every country. So you're not doing anything illegal. So the question is, are you doing anything improper? So I wrote at the bottom here that you may be breaching your contract. If you have a Netflix subscription, Netflix make you agree, and they say, you may view the Netflix content primarily within the country in which you've established your account. So if you use a VPN, you may not be breaking the American law, but you may be breaking your agreement with Netflix. And that itself is a prohibition. You're not allowed to go against a contract. And I brought you the sources on page 7. What is hein tzedek? Eifa tzedek, the Gemara says, your hein has to be hein, and your lav has to be lav. When you agree to something, you have to stick to that thing. You're not allowed to breach a contract. So it may be that VPNs are prohibited in halacha if you already have an agreement with someone that you're not going to do that. But if you're just checking the price of flights on Expedia or whatever it is, I don't have any contract with Expedia that I won't access their website via someone else. They know, they take that market risk, they know that that's possible, and they understand that, and if they want to try and block VPNs, they can. And by the way, there's this cat and mouse game, where Netflix tries to block VPNs wherever they can, and other VPNs come along and advertise quite freely, we can get around Netflix block. Because it's all legal, there's nothing illegal, and it becomes like a game of computer hackers, each trying to get the other one to not beat them. But there may be reasons in terms of breach of contract, but then you get into difficult rules. Did I enter into a contract? If I want to watch sports in America, and I can't get access because they don't allow access to that sports coverage outside America, so I use a VPN in America to get the access, I think the question is going to be, that's perfectly legal, there's no deen about the deen problem, but the question is, did you in any stage agree with the people that are providing this content that you won't do it if you're not in the country? You'll have to work out what you clicked and what you agreed to and how that worked as to whether that was the case. Let's just finish with one thing, which is source 23, which I leave you to read, because this leads us into the next topic, which we're not going to do next time because it's pre-Pesach, but we are going to do, please God, after Pesach, which is, this is all very well, but what happens to Kedoshim to you? Is there never a case of Yashra v'hatov? Is there not, what about Yashras? We're all working out, well, according to the letter of the law, you can do this, you can do that, etc. Someone asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein here, number 23, are you allowed to download and copy music from one cassette? Well, this was cassette. So Rav Lichtenstein's answer is, you bought it, you made a kinyan, you reserve the right to do with what you like, and then he paused, but you will not win a medal for Kedoshim to you. Okay? And we have to talk about that seriously. At what point does the law require you to go beyond the letter of the law? Not just suggest, but require. That's a very important topic which we need to deal with. Please God, after Pesach, I'd like to deal with that. Together with the opposite topic, which is, what about loopholes? When do we say, well, you can slip in through this loophole and haramas, etc., and it's okay, because technically it's okay. Sometimes we do one, sometimes we do the other. At the end, I brought you some halachic conclusions. These are not piskei halacha, but these are suggestions as to how you view the halacha in light of what we said last week and this week. Bottom line, dina de malchus adina will always be the answer, in a sense, or more than that. If it's illegal in the country you're in, it's almost certainly against the halacha. So that's something to think about. And in that sense, let's move forward to 2 weeks from today, please God. I wish everyone a Freilich and Purim. Those who need a Refuah Shleima should please God get a Refuah Shleima b'chol chayei Yisrael, and we'll move on from there.